As we said, we would continue the conversation about SIU and higher education in general with SIU President Randy Dunn. Dr. Dunn, you mentioned gender equity in terms of pay and in terms of getting women into positions of, well, administrative positions, higher level positions. What types of things are you doing to equal those things out and really make sure that glass ceiling doesn't exist?
You know, we talked in the article for the Southern when the reporter was assigned about the fact that we end up taking on a variety of strategies, but they're more at the departmental or college level. So if, you know, someone is wondering as to whether or not there's kind of an overall initiative out there on gender equity that sometimes you know, might see for other groups, such as underrepresented groups, when you're trying to hire faculty and that type of thing. We don't really have a university-wide program, but I do think you see the ability of the departments and the colleges to use some strategies that can be helpful that support an increased level of equity. Let me say, I don't think we're there yet, by the way. And in fact, the takeaway from the analysis that the Southern did, which to me does seem about right given what the data that I looked at, in reference to the story, is that we line up about nationally where you see gender equity and pay for most other sectors of work. Higher education actually looks better as women move through the ranks, speaking now about the professoriate specifically. Women tend to look better. Pay is more equitable as you move higher through the ranks, so that if you see someone who's made full professor status, we're at about 90% equity, for instance. So that tells me that on the higher ends, we get closer to the goal as women, you know, move their way through the system over time. I do think, though, the challenges come as we have younger women entering the profession, and this could be either the professoriate or coming in as professional staff, non-faculty members, who we obviously recruit from a national pool and want to build their careers here. So there you've got to look at things like an opportunity maybe for a 10-year stop out. One of the things that kind of keeps pushing women behind in moving through the ranks and advancing in the profession is the fact that sometimes they'll pull out or stop out for child rearing. And if we could find a means by which to slow down the tenure clock to allow a catch-up period, I think that could be helpful. We look at mentoring programs that may exist. Sometimes that would be something on the campus. Sometimes it would be through a professional organization or the disciplinary association. For whatever area that professor may be in, that can be a means to kind of jumpstart the research agenda and keep it moving forward, fast track that a little bit, again, to account for the fact that sometimes women will need to take a couple of years out as they're moving through the profession. Those types of things I think you see getting done more at a unit level on campus to try to provide some level of assistance. And what I said out of the article that maybe bears thinking about is whether or not we should formalize some of that across a university-wide to figure out a way so that everyone has access to that same set of benefits. Good departments who know they've got to keep women in the teaching ranks, or if you've got a unit where you have a lot of professional staff who are hiring from outside, you can't just get women hired and then not worry about what you do in the work environment and the support you provide. Otherwise, they go to other places that have these things. So maybe what we need to be doing is thinking in a means by which to do something university-wide or codify that set of strategies that are getting used so you have everybody with equal access to some of those benefits. Because right now, if there's any fault, I do think it tends to be more departmentally driven by those who are creative and thinking about how you keep women able to stay with us at the university and then advancing through the profession as they go.
I want to give you the opportunity with just a couple of minutes that we have left to give us an update on the budget at the state level. Over the next couple of weeks, what do you expect?
Over the next couple of weeks, I don't know that I expect a great deal, save for one thing. And, you know, this has become such a torture drama at this juncture. It's hard to tell where to dive in and what to talk about. But as you know, a couple of weeks ago, we disclosed a significant set of cuts that we would have to move forward on. One set of cuts predicated on the fact that if the governor's proposed budget for FY17 was passed, we showed the list of cuts that we would have to enact. And then a tougher list, almost a doomsday list of things that we would have to think about if we had this perfect storm of no spending for 16, no budget for 17, and no indication that there was any move to change that. So we come in another week with the legislature back in session. They've been on spring break. Right before the spring break, the Senate passed Senate Bill 2059, which is a $3.8 billion spending plan that would include universities, some social services, Amtrak, I think, was included, etc. We anticipate that that would come back to the House for a vote once the legislature comes back here the first part of April. I do think there is general consensus, some conventional wisdom, that the House will pass that bill and then send it on to the governor. What the governor will do with it, we'll see. And, of course, as all good students of the Illinois Constitution know, the governor has 60 days to decide whether he'll sign it, veto it, what have you. And it could be the case that the governor sits on it for a while. But if he does choose to veto it, and he's stated publicly that he will, at what point he would choose to veto that as he's signaled, then it would come back to the Senate and House on an override vote, and we'll see what happens. As I've said many times, Jennifer, we need a spending bill. We may not see a budget for this year, for 17, for who knows how long. That could be the political play that unfolds here. But we have to have a spending plan. And even though there's not specific revenue tied to it, it's not a hoax, it's not a sham, because that's a real appropriation that allows us to get in line for real dollars. And we would work with Comptroller Munger through the period that we could access that FY16 funding to get money flowing to the university. Because whether or not there's a budget, we have to get authority to spend, and we have to be able to get in line with everybody else who's now getting paid by the state of Illinois. So I do think we're going to see House action on that Senate Bill 2059, and then we see where we go from there. But we've got to have a spending bill.
And, of course, we'll keep you up to date as that bill continues to move, as well as several others that we're keeping an eye on. Dr. Dunn, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jennifer.